T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
I honest to God believed when they made the Otto Porter Jr. trade, that's a pretty good move for the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get anyone in free agency. They're going to be reliant upon the draft to build this team. The problem is, and we all know it, is that they got two guys on that team now that are paid a ton of money that aren't really guys that deserve that kind of money. Both Otto Porter Jr. and Zach LaVine, I think they are more supporting players than they are featured stars. But they have to build this team somehow, and that is a way to do it.
I'm not in love with the trade, but I don't hate it either, and I think that there's some middle ground there. The problem is that there is no longer any middle ground when it comes to John Paxson. There's no longer any gray area. It's either people want to check a box. We love him. We always remember Johnny Jump Shot from 93, or we hate him, and he's the worst Bulls executive ever. We had a question at 5 at 5. Who's the most honest sports executive in Chicago? I don't know if that's John Paxson or not. That's a good debate, but I do know who the most polarizing one has become. It is Pax.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
The Chicago Blackhawks pick up their 7th consecutive victory. They've only given up 20 goals in these last 7 games. The Hawks in their best hot streak of the year, trying to hang in there in the Western Conference playoff chase.
Wow, that's good.
That's hockey, baby!
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is a glorious morning, a glorious February morning in the fine city of Chicago. Blackhawks may never lose again.
Good morning, Mully.
Good morning, Mr. David. Never again. Maybe never again. What do you think?
7 straight. I'm good with that. They're fun to watch again.
They're fun to watch again.
When you watch them beat the Red Wings on the United Center home ice, you feel like there's a sense of the pride that people have, and especially because it's the Red Wings. They don't play them enough anymore.
5 goals, 5 Chelsea daggers.
You know, they're doing things at the right times. They're doing things with a little bit of flair. They're doing things the way the Hawks used to do things.
Cam Ward, fantastic, 43 saves because of the 5 goals. Maybe he gets overlooked in that game, but, man, he was good. I watched the second period, which was like watching paint dry, and then the third period, that was awesome. The second line was pretty unbelievable, Mr. David.
The second line has developed the chemistry that they had hoped because Dylan Strome, Alex DeBrincat,
playing
and Cahoon,
down in the minors.
Dominic Cahoon is a guy who has been very solid this season, and people didn't expect it. This is a guy that has one of the more remarkable stats in the NHL. He's played in every game for the Hawks, has yet to go to the penalty box.
Right, no penalties.
That tells you how disciplined of a player that he is, and it tells you how he does the little things. And that second line, you're right, they are scoring. They are hard to deal with right now.
They're young. They're super young. I didn't know Cahoon was that fast, to be honest with you. I thought his speed really kicked in yesterday, and that's an undrafted free agent.
It's a good signing by Stan Bowman. Yeah. It was a good trade by Stan Bowman to get Dylan Strome here. You know, Nick Schmaltz was a guy who had done well as a Blackhawk, but I think that it was at the time they needed some sort of change, and a change of scenery certainly has benefited Strome, as they say.
Strome and Cat.
And the Cat.
They are like such a kind of Mutt and Jeff pair. You know what I mean? They're like the big guy and the little guy, and they played together before. They have this great chemistry.
You can tell.
And the age of those guys, I mean, that really portends good things moving forward.
Well, it's important to remember, I think, when you look at Dylan Strome especially, because he's 21 years old, and he was a former, third overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that is as hot as any player in the league right now, and not named Patrick Kane. And I think that when you look at everybody 7 games ago, was talking about, well, maybe the Hawks should tank. Maybe the Hawks should think about getting in line for that number one overall pick, Jack Hughes, and the guy that, you know, everybody wants to be a part of. Dylan Strome, as a 21-year-old, is almost like your lottery pick this year. You can make the playoffs, you can make a run for the playoffs, and still feel like you've got a guy in Dylan Strome that you didn't have at the beginning of the season and bodes well for the future.
The Hawks are 4 points out of the second wild card, which is shared by the Wild and the Blues. The Blues have won like 11 in a row, right? The Blues have been unbelievable. They've really put together a run. So there's hot teams and there's hot teams, and that's good.
It's and you mentioned the second line. How about the first line? I mean, obviously when they made this move to the second line, they solidified the first line with Kane and Taze, and anytime they play together, good things happen.
Yeah, and boy, they were just having fun with the empty net, weren't they? That was just
my turn. Just,
yeah, that was you have this. No, no, you take this one. Oh, hey, thank you.
And you know, Molly, as good as of a win as that was yesterday, and as nice it is that they continue the 7-game win streak, to me, one of the more significant things over the weekend was not what happened during the game, but what happened at practice on Saturday. Corey Crawford back on the ice, a little bit of a surprise, and if they continue to win, they don't have to win every game, but if they continue to win at a high enough clip with 26 games left to be in the playoff hunt, his possible return, very interesting.
Sure, no doubt
about it. Very exciting.
How about Otto Porter Jr.? The Otto Porter era began. He quickly Olebossed into one heck of a first game.
Yes, no? Whatever that is. But yeah, he did.
That's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of myself for
very,
the use of Olebossed.
Very proud of yourself.
We've created a word.
I think that the Otto Porter Jr. era, is that what we're going to call it now?
It started now.
Okay, it started. They welcomed him into the fold. Hey, he's averaging 17.5 points a game. He is what they thought he was going to be. He's a professional player. He solidifies a lineup that needs some structure.
It might be too good, but he's good. And
that's the question,
that's
isn't
that's
it?
That's the fear, is it not?
Well, they did lose on Saturday, though.
They did, yes.
But that was the revenge game, so that may be a bit of an asterisk attached to that one.
It was Parker Portis, right?
That was
had nothing to do with Bradley Beal being the best player on the floor by a mile. And that was like an all-star game.
Oh, come on now, though.
Now, listen, that was an all-star game. There wasn't a guy on the floor for either team that played a lick of defense.
That was an appropriate Jabari Parker homecoming game, because defense was optional.
It was awful.
Hey, who said Jim Boylan couldn't get the most out of Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker?
Northwestern loses a heartbreaker last night to number 20, Iowa. They were on the road, and they lost 80-79, blowing a 13-point lead late in the game. They host Rutgers on Tuesday. The Ramblers. Loyola goes on the road, and, you know, Loyola hasn't been a great road team. Rallies in the second half and beats Valparaiso 56-51 to give themselves a little separation in the Valley. That would be a big deal for them to win the Missouri Valley. With it comes an automatic bid to the NIT, and with it comes
let's not make it sound like they had to get, like, planes, trains, and automobiles and had to endure all this hardship about going on the road.
They go on the road. They
took a bus to Valpo.
Look at how they've done on the road this year, buddy.
They took a bus to Valpo.
They got a good win at Drake, a good win. Did they win at Illinois State? They might have lost that game. I'm just saying, their results, they're 16-9, and I would be curious to count up how many of those are road losses. I think it's tough. Even neutral site losses.
Tough environment. That's a tough conference.
Yeah.
I'm happy for the Ramblers. I hope they're getting it together at the right time. Everybody loves a good Loyola story.
Certainly on this show. No question about it.
And I don't think people are tired of that. I mean,
Bernstein doesn't care for it for some reason.
Who?
Dan Bernstein.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He doesn't like it, I know.
He poo-pooed their moment last year before they had it. Can you imagine? He wrote a column about how awful basketball is, and then he just had it through it. With apologies to Loyola, who no one cares about.
But didn't I see
and then they wound up in the final four.
Bobblehead on his desk back there?
That's my sister Jean bobblehead. Did I not give you one?
No, I did not get one. I don't think I could accept one at the time. I think I was like bound by some.
You were still covering the team.
Still covering the team, bound by an ethics policy.
Former Loyola beat writer.
Exactly. Thank you. Those were the days.
You are awesome. You jumped in on that story like full head first.
Listen, you know a good story when you see one.
No, listen, it was a great story. They got to the Final Four, and they could have beaten Michigan had they not had a couple of bad injuries.
Hey, in interest of closing the loop on your college basketball.
And I don't think they'd have won the championship. They could have gotten to the game.
Equal time, so we don't all ramblers all the time. Illinois had a big victory as well over the weekend, and we will talk to Coach Underwood.
They've had a couple of good wins
at 8:20.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah, we're gonna dip our toe in the college basketball world.
It's that time.
The committee has revealed its preliminary rankings. Saturday they did it, so that was before. Well, no, they did it. What? What day did they do it? It was before the Duke.
It was Saturday.
It was.
Afternoon.
Was that after? Was it after the game or the Duke beating
Virginia game?
Yeah. Boy, Duke, that was a great game.
How about that block?
Oh,
I have seen some amazing dunks by Zion Williamson. I have seen some amazing shots and everything else.
Yep.
The block that he made on that three-point attempt was maybe the most athletic play I've seen this year. And I don't even think I'm exaggerating.
So Duke is the number one overall seed in the tournament right now in the preliminary rankings, followed by Tennessee, Virginia, and Gonzaga, right? So...
Can we just talk American?
Just the beginning.
Alliance of American Football for the next 3 hours.
You know what, man? I actually watched the Alliance of American Football, and I couldn't believe how professionally it was covered. That was the thing that stood out to me is that I didn't know any of the players really. I knew a lot of the people on the sidelines, but they covered the game. It was not like tongue in cheek, and it wasn't. They did a really good job of presenting it as football,
and they held the audience.
That was part of the reason why. Great ratings. And I think that's why. I think that you could turn that game on and do other things, which is what I was doing. But I was looking up, and I did tweet out that felt like the Bears were getting trolled when the guy that was signed off the street on Thursday kicked a 47-yard field goal right down the middle, man. No question at all about that one.
You have post-traumatic parking disorder?
I think we all do.
Okay.
Don't you? When you see a guy
sign
on Thursday and kick a 47-yarder right down the middle on Saturday, you can't help but think like, oh, boy, couldn't they have gotten a guy off the street that would be better than the guy that they gave the $9 million guaranteed contract to?
We can cover that. Oh, that was just a prelude to last night's Grammy Awards.
Yeah, how did that go? Did you enjoy it?
I did.
There was a country album that won, right?
Yeah, Kacey Musgraves was very good. Very, very, very successful night for her.
That's the country
artist? Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, don't know. I saw Childish Gambino won best song, right? Or best... I don't understand the difference
by the way, today,
best song and the best whatever.
Record of the year was...
What's the difference between album or record?
Oh, I don't know.
And what's the difference between song or performance or whatever the hell, whatever.
Happy birthday to Diana Ross.
Really?
Today.
Wow.
Maybe it was yesterday or maybe it was like March 26th.
How...
Did you see she wished herself a happy birthday?
No.
It's in March.
How old is she?
I think she's 75.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give her a little leeway.
Okay.
She'll be 75 next month when it's actually her birthday.
Is that right?
But did it...
Why did she jump in with a happy birthday
to her?
I'm
not sure.
Because it was Grammy's time?
Yeah, probably.
I guess.
Well, by the way, happy birthday to me. Always a great toast if you can make it. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall. We got the 5 and 5 next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment is brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Cold and flu season hits hard, especially for the millions of people living with heart disease, asthma, or cancer. A fever can be a sign of the flu, which could mean a trip to the emergency room. Use the number one hospital preferred thermometer, the Exergen Temporal Scanner, backed by more than 70 clinical studies. It is the best way to stay safe this cold and flu season.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What did you think of Otto Porter's first two games as a Bull? And will it matter if Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis play as well as they did for the Wizards this weekend?
Yeah, don't care how Parker and Portis play for the Wizards now because they're no longer on the team. I thought Otto Porter looked pretty good. I thought he looked real good the first couple of games. I understand the first game was better than the second game, but I think he looks like he can play. I think he's a good addition to their team. I think that he fits in to their group. I would worry that he's a little bit better maybe than I want him to be, and I'm delighted that that they gave a video tribute to Jabari and Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis might have deserved one, but Jabari didn't even last a year, but got the video for it. What the hell was that? That's
all right. They had all the money invested, so
I guess you had to. Yeah, they were doing a. They must have been doing a documentary on him anyway,
right?
Anticipating it work out, but yeah, I think Otto Porter's good. My only fear, again, I don't want them going 500 the rest of the way. I want them being in the draft lottery and getting a shot at a potentially franchise-changing player, because I think that's the only way they get one, and they pretty much have made an admission of that.
I think it is interesting to see how Portis develops as it relates to Porter fitting in with the Bulls. Portis and Porter, I think they're going to be kind of linked. Only because Bobby Portis went to Washington with a chip on his shoulder that he obviously had one here, and he played with that edge. But I do think he's felt he has something to prove. He was very, I think, professional in his demeanor post-game, but he did obviously enter the court at the United Center on Saturday night intent on proving the Bulls wrong, that they made a mistake. And I wonder if he'll carry that into every game moving
forward. But he didn't sign the contract extension.
Well, I know.
They tried to re-sign him, and I mean,
he says they tried to lowball him. He says that they didn't have the incentives.
He would have taken out Porter Jr. money?
Oh, well, he certainly would have. Who wouldn't?
I wish somebody would lowball me with a $40 million contract.
No kidding,
offer.
Right?
That's for a guy that's
exactly.
Not even a starter in the
league.
Who's
not even a starter.
Maybe on an awful team.
On a bad team. So I guess I'm sort of curious to see how that kind of their comparisons over time, how that plays out. Jabari Parker, it was obvious he's playing with a little more joy. He was enjoying that moment. He was enjoying that his second or third homecoming now. I'm losing track. But it's all about Otto Porter Jr. And you're right. I think the fear might be that he fits in too well. He assimilated himself very quickly, 18 points and 17 points on successive nights. He's definitely the professional outside shooter that they have lacked. He spaces the floor. Markkanen will benefit from that. Zach LaVine will benefit from that. He plays defense like a pro. I think he's going to be pretty good. Now, they're still the fourth worst team in the league. If they're the third worst team, they have a 12.5% chance of getting that number one pick versus a 14% chance. There's a 1.5 difference. Obviously, I can do the math. How big is that difference? I don't know. But I think that Otto Porter Jr. at least makes the Bulls less laughable.
Yeah, the video tribute thing is funny. I saw that. I did laugh. I'm like, really? But that's the thing now. You're anywhere for 5 minutes. Well, we got to do a video tribute. But I doubt anybody would have left the UC and say, hey, where was the tribute for Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis? Then Portis goes on Instagram and he says, happy to be in a place where I'm wanted! ! Again, they offered you a contract.
Right.
You were wanted. Okay? It certainly made sense for them to move on. I don't care about Parker and Portis too much. If they want to keep talking about Jim Boylan, I'm interested in listening to that, but I'm not worried about that.
That was interesting, wasn't it? Jabari's comments?
Put it all on Boylan, right?
Yep.
And Hoiberg didn't play him where he wanted to play, so he forgot about that part. As far as Porter's play this weekend, what you're looking for is the outside shooting. Welcome to the NBA in 2019. 6 of 10 in 2 games on three-pointers, and the Bulls are hoping he can regain his form from a season ago. He's a top-3 shooter in the league. So they were scoring. They just still can't stop anybody, which is a bit of an issue. But early on, so far, so good for Porter.
Yeah, I like Otto Porter. He's a good player. He provides something that they didn't have with a pretty athletic wing defender. He's long. He is a good shooter. He will improve them, I think, to some extent. But I don't know if the improvement will be so much that they'll fall out of what they're trying to really achieve here and get one of those top-3 picks, because the draft really goes off the cliff after the third pick. So, I don't have any grudge against Jabari Parker or Bobby Portis. It's nothing that serious. I do think Bobby Portis, we all know he's an emotional guy, but I do think he revved it up a little bit with the trade and the Twitter shade and everything else that was going on. And it's to be expected. It's the NBA. It's drama. We supposedly live for things like this, but good for Otto Porter. Happy to see him.
Yeah, I mean, 6 of 10 from 3-point land, 2 games. That's great. I would not. I wish they had not have won on Friday night against the Nets. Didn't really see that one coming. I thought maybe they had a better shot. If you would have said which of the 2 games are they more likely to win, I thought it would be like the grudge match that they have Paxson come into the locker room and start talking crap about Parker, and you know, this guy was a bum and he got you to where you're at right now, and look at all the things he caused, and yada 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 yada. He's fine. I mean, Porter Jr.'s fine. It's not his fault he's making. I mean, the amount of money these guys make in the NBA is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, God bless him that he's got it, but he's not a $28 million a year. That's just wow. It's asinine.
Thank you for the question, though.
The Blackhawks won their 7th straight game and are making a playoff run. Do they have what it takes to make the postseason? Or, excuse me, let me try that again. Do they have to make the postseason for this season to be a success?
I think that by the definition of the Hawks' stated goals, one goal, that the, you know, everybody wants to say the easy answer is yes, absolutely. If you don't make the playoffs, it's a failure at 1901 West Madison. I don't know that's a case anymore. I don't know that's a case this season specifically. On January 17th, this team was tied with the Senators for the lowest point total in the NHL. They didn't know what direction was up, what the direction was down, but it just was not going well. Jeremy Colleton is a guy who I think that when he was introduced on November 6th, you're like, who is that guy? What is he all about? You didn't know him. Maybe a lot of people still have some questions about his credentials and certainly some curiosity about his personality. But he's a pretty good coach. And I think that when you look at everything that's happened this season and the way that he's introduced, you know, a new defensive approach, it goes to a more man system rather than Joe Quenneville's zone system, 17-18-6 under Colleton, you know, they have solidified the top two lines where the chemistry has mattered. And certainly the Dylan Strome trade was important and effective and impactful, but he has to put him with the right guys, and he has played him with the right guys. And you look at some other subtle things about putting Eric Gustafson on the power play, and the power play success in the last 20 games has been at a 40% clip. That's outstanding. Jeremy Colleton, his ability to emerge from this season as a legitimate bona fide coach in the NHL, I think is as important as anything, whether they make the playoffs or not. If they don't make the playoffs, I think that everyone understands why. Slow start, kind of a really dramatic transition, a lot of changes along the way, Corey Crawford out. So I don't know that this season has to end with a playoff berth for it to be a success, because I think that there's been progress that has been made that might be more as significant with or without a first-round playoff exit.
Yeah, I think that, let's put it this way, if they do indeed make a playoff run, if they do make the postseason, then yes, the season will be a success. Can it be a success without making the playoffs? I don't know. I think we got to see how this all flushes out. But I think that what you're saying is accurate, David. I think that that Colleton making that change is a difficult one. And if you get to the playoffs, then that justifies the change that you made. If you don't, there's still going to be open questions that you're going to have to answer. But I do think that they have a direction. I do think that they have systems in place. And I do think that seeing younger players play well makes things a bit happier moving forward. Now, you're going to run into problems with that as well, because some of these debilitating contracts are still there and they're with older players. But you look at the age of the roster, and it's the core guys that are the only ones with a little bit of age on them. The rest of that team is so young, and the possibility seems so bright for some of these guys that at this point, as a transition year, it actually feels like a success right now, given the fact that they put together 7 in a row. If they get into the playoffs, that is a really positive thing to have happen. But I don't know that we'll look at it again, depending on how things go down the stretch here. I don't know that we'll look at it that way, because it's a distinct possibility that they could come up short. They could fail to make any kind of move or get any kind of relief at the trade deadline. And you could look back and say that it was a false positive right now, and they should have taken advantage of some other options and worried about other things if indeed they don't make the playoffs. But it's hard to mess with a team that's playing the way they have right now. And I think that we got to see where this ends up. But potentially, Making the playoffs definitely gives you success. Potentially, you are a success, even if you don't make it, if the young guys still look good. But I think it'd be a lot easier if they did make the playoffs.
This morning, the rebuild on the fly looks like is working. 3 weeks ago, it looked like a big failure so far. I mean, DeBrincat and Strome, you see 21-year-old players coming through. So the development is happening, and they have their hand-picked head coach, we think, for the future, and things have turned around on his watch. But 16 teams make it. This is not a great conference. Front office stated again and again that this is a playoff team. And coming into the year, we didn't know what Corey Crawford was going to give this team. So I don't think you can point to that as much as an excuse. So to call it a success because so many teams make it, poor conference, yeah, I do think they need to make it.
A lot of teams do make it, but I just think if you look at it from a year-to-year perspective, you know, they weren't in the playoffs last season. So just by that logic, if they get there this year with the turnover they've had in a few different positions with the new head coach, which was, you know, something of a controversial move when they did decide to axe Joel Quenneville, given the fact that he was so successful here, I think if you get in the playoffs with the first, you know, tenure here of Jeremy Colleton, I think you can look at it as a success, and I think it does justify the decision to make that head coaching change. Now, like you said, Joe, yes, you're right. A lot of teams get in, but how many teams or how many times have we seen in the NHL, you know, 6, 7, 8 seeds go on a run? You know, you get a hot goalie, you get a little bit of the puck luck that they always want to bring up. You can see it all the time, and I don't think it's out of the question. You know, if you get Corey Crawford back and he's ready for a playoff run and you get him back to near what he can be, I don't think it's out of the question for the Blackhawks to make a run. You just have to get in, and right now they're setting themselves up to do that wonderfully, and I think you have to call it a success if they do get in.
Listen, no matter what, the arrow's pointing up. It's pointing in the right direction. Mully, you nailed it with the makeup of the roster, right? There's a lot of young guys that you can get excited about. You know, I hate to say it because I was against how they did it, but it looks like moving Joe Quenneville out was the right thing to do. I just don't like how it was handled. I think it would have been a better move in the last summer, as opposed to in the middle of the season for a Hall of Famer like he is. But right now, it looks like they were right. And if you can get Corey Crawford back either towards the end of this year or next year, and a fully healthy Corey Crawford plus this group, I mean, that screams playoffs to me. So that, to me, it's just the idea that, you know, and I almost have to compare it to the Bulls, right? Like, at least with the Blackhawks, there's something to grab onto, right? There's something to gravitate to. You see that there's direction and that there's hope. Where on the other co-inhabitant of that building, that there seems to be a rudderless ship other than really Lauri Markkanen, who looks like he's a legitimate
NBA player. That's
interesting.
That's an interesting comparison. We should get back to that.
That's a very, very interesting question.
What is more likely, the Yankees stepping into the Manny Machado sweepstakes or the White Sox offering him a $250 million deal?
Boy, I mean, there's rumors flying. I don't know that anything's really happening, but the I think it's more likely the Yankees are there than that the White Sox are offering $250. If the White Sox are offering $250, they should be peeved that the guy's not signing with them. I don't know that he's going to get a better offer than that. $220 from the Yankees, you know, is that greater than $250 from the White Sox, believe it or not? That's a conversation you'd have to think over, how you distribute the $30 million, what else you could get in terms of advertising and all the rest of it, and the possibilities for playing in New York versus Chicago for the second team in Chicago, let's be brutally honest. I if the Sox are offering $250, then I tip my hat, and I won't care if they get him or not. I'll be very impressed that they have. That seems a little higher than I would imagine, to be brutally honest with you. So if they offer $250 and they can't get the guy, then hey, you know, they did their part. That's fine by me as a Sox fan. And if they were offering $250, he ought to jump at that. Over 8 years, are you kidding me? That's pretty damn good, especially if there is some sort of a out in that deal. But I just don't see that. I just don't think that's a legitimate figure. I didn't think 175 was as accurate, but I'm guessing that it's closer to 175 than to 250.
Somewhere in the middle, maybe?
I think.
Yeah. I think when you hear Hal Steinbrenner talking last week about how hey, nothing's changed. I'm still going to be in on every deal until the no stone unturned, and talk in a way that reminds you that his last name is Steinbrenner. It makes you a little bit cautious if you're a Sox fan. So the question being, what is more likely, the Yankees stepping in to the Machado sweepstakes or the Sox offering him $250 million? I think it's more likely the Yankees step in. They are the Yankees. They do these things. They have a loaded roster right now. They have Stanton and Judge, and they have an infield that's stacked, but they don't have Manny. And if they can still get Manny, I think they're still going to try to get Manny. That is how they operate. That is their MO. That is the likelihood, more than thinking that the Sox would go up to $250 million. I don't think that they have yet, only because we haven't seen it confirmed to that point. $175 million was the low end of the offer. And I think that you're right, Mully, that if the Sox were offering $250 million over 8 years, we might not be talking about Manny Machado looking for his home right now. I think that he would probably have signed that contract because that would be a fair, lucrative deal. And it would be a sign that the Sox are really committed to getting this guy. So that he hasn't done that, yeah, I think that we will continue to discuss it every day. We'll continue to discuss it every day until talking about Yu Darvish's miles per hour sounds like it is a refreshing change of subject.
And Ken Rosenthal reporting on Friday that neither Harper or Machado want to sign first. The White Sox don't want to get in a bidding war. Hector Gomez said they already offered $250, right? I mean, that's the thing. What do you believe? I don't know that you can believe anything at this point. Do we believe the Yankees are in for $220? I don't know. It's believable because it's the Yankees.
This all happened because Ken Rosenstein wrote an article.
But after the fact,
gets me every time.
If Machado doesn't sign here, Bob Nightingale's going to go out and say, because Kenny told him that the Sox offered $250 because that would make Sox fans happy anyways. What is more likely, since I think, just a wild guess, I think the offer is in that range between. I don't think it's as low as 175. I don't think it's as high as 250. But Yankees, seeing that they could get Machado for 220 over 8, if that's the case, that is more likely.
I've always thought that the Yankees would be in on Machado, that they were going to linger around, that they could, and they certainly do have the money if they wanted him. They could give him, you know, 220, 250, 300. They can afford it. And while he might not be able to play shortstop there, you can certainly slot him into third base. They can move on from Andujar and probably get something pretty good for him if they do need to free up a spot for Machado. So it makes sense, you know, if the White Sox offered him 250 and the Yankees offered him 220, I think it's a no-brainer to sign with the New York Yankees. They're a playoff team. They've got a great foundation. It is New York. All of the signs, I think, would point to that. But, Mully, like you said, I mean, if the Sox offer him 250, what more can they really do? They're not going to outbid themselves. And if it is the highest offer and he decides to go somewhere else because of the appeal of the franchise or the city or the success of the team, you've done all you can do, and that is one of the problems, you know, being, like you said, the second team in this town and a team that hasn't won anything in a really long time. It is going to be hard to bring in these marquee guys.
Well, I'll say this. I think it's as likely that the Yankees are involved, but I think the Sox, 250, they want this guy. Harper's not coming here, okay? That's not happening. And they cannot have this offseason end up with two swings and two misses on these two guys. So I'm not surprised that this 250 number might be true. Now, yeah, is it better to be a Yankee than a White Sox? It is right now. It is in the history of baseball, of course. But Manny Machado just screams to me like the kind of guy that wants to be a number one, period. Not wanting to share the spotlight. He wants the name on the back of his jersey, okay? He doesn't want to just be a Yankee. He wants to be Manny Machado and then the team. So that's why I still think the White Sox make total sense. Shortstop and alpha dog. That equals 35th and Shields.
Yeah, Kevin, you had... sorry, I forgot my question. I won't waste your time. It happens.
Damn!
What does it mean when the Alliance of American Football has higher television ratings than an NBA game involving James Harden against Russell Westbrook?
It means we are a nation addicted to football. It means that we will watch anything on the screen if it's in prime time and it looks like the NFL. If it resembles the NFL in any way, shape, or form, because that did. The AAF resembled the NFL. It had some legitimacy. You're right, Molly. They covered it like a game in the middle of October between two AFC East opponents. I think that we are a nation addicted to football. If you're a compulsive eater, you don't complain about the generic cookies. You just gobble them up because they're there and you like it. And everyone that you have, you want more of it. And that's football in America right now. It's a week after the Super Bowl. Everybody's complaining, this is the first Sunday without the NFL. No, that's okay. I am here for Memphis, Birmingham. I am here for the San Diego Fleet quarterback getting his helmet knocked off. Everybody likes what they saw. It has legitimacy because it has Bill Polian behind it. It has some names you recognize. The football isn't that great. I mean, let's face it. It's not really that fundamentally sound. The pass protection stinks. The running the football between the tackles isn't what you see in the NFL. But it's a start. And I think that the ratings reflect curiosity. Now, you have to temper that with the XFL also had huge ratings when it came out its first weekend, and it fizzled. But I don't think the XFL had the opportunity to be a legitimate training ground for the NFL the way this league does. The NFL is going to show some interest in this, I predict. I think the NFL eventually could end up wanting to buy this and use this as a developmental league because that is an idea whose time has come. I'm here for the AAF.
Yeah, I watched it, as I said, and I enjoyed it. And I think the reason is exactly what you said, David. I think that we are addicted to football and we do love football. I also think the reason that we are is that football is the perfect television sport. It fits perfectly into the timeouts. Everything about it. I actually like some of the rules. It didn't bother me that they weren't kicking off, and it didn't bother me some of the other little rule variations. I think it's a great playground for the NFL to experiment if it gets to that point at some point. But there were a lot of recognizable people on the sidelines. And, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. I also think that, if I'm not mistaken, was it Steve Superior ran a kind of variation of the Philly special that I would imagine a guy like Matt Nagy would jot down and take a look at and think about it.
So ball coach.
The fact that you're not kicking extra points and that you're going for two all the time, maybe you see a play or two that finds its way into the NFL. You know, I didn't know enough about the players. I didn't really recognize any of the players at all. Having said that, I think that it's kind of cool. I kind of liked it. And I know it's a minor league, but I watch preseason football, so why the hell shouldn't I watch that? It's just the perfect television show. And I wasn't hunting around trying to see what I was going to watch. It came up on my TV and I stared at it like the bells and whistles of Wheel of Fortune. You know, it was just like, oh, look, yeah. Oh, there's a nice girl presenting. Oh, the wheel is spinning. That's how I felt watching the game. I was just mesmerized by it because it's football and they covered it like it was real.
The four-letter network, very sensitive about the ratings, too. They're releasing statements saying, well, we peaked at this number. See, we beat the AAF. You're the NBA. Really? Okay.
Right.
And, by the way, it peaked after the AAF games were over because they're really quick because of the faster pace and the limited TV timeouts. So, and we're talking about the NBA and network TV. So it was an even playing field as far as that goes. They weren't on cable.
And they have like Kurt Warner come on and talk about the game at halftime. And I'm thinking like, wow, Kurt Warner played in the equivalent of the AAF. And, you know, maybe there's a guy on the field here. That kid looked quick. Why don't the Bears sign that guy for camp? You know, you can't help but think about it that way.
And as you mentioned earlier, it was impossible to sit there on Saturday every time a field goal was made and not think about the Bears kicker and how many players that they're going to be signing.
The new league was developed to troll the Bears. That's my conclusion.
Even though they got rid of most kicking throughout the game. But you're right. Warner's out there. You see Bill Polian behind it. Hines Ward. Dale Johnson's a GM. There's an Ebersol that's developing the TV. I mean, they made it look fantastic, even though the quarterback play is pretty awful. But I like some of the rule changes. I think in a couple of years, we're going to see the NFL make some changes that may have started over in the AAF. We know they want to get rid of kickoffs anyways.
Yeah, goodbye kickoffs.
Yeah,
I'm done with that.
It's going to happen. Yeah, did you miss it?
No.
In these games?
Not
I didn't
all.
Miss it. No. So I'm not clearing the schedule to watch the games. I was available Saturday. I watched the game Saturday. I was busy yesterday. I didn't watch, but I bet against Singletary and won.
See? You can't help yourself.
You guys are all absolutely ridiculous. This is what we're doing? The Alliance of American Football. Are you guys going to keep this same energy next year when there's the XFL as well? And we have,
we're gonna have
three
to
football
bring it,
leagues?
Bring it, Kevin.
Oh, my God. This is the most preposterous garbage. You couldn't pay me enough to watch the Alliance of American Football
Kevin,
on a Saturday night.
AAF or hockey game? Run. What would you rather watch?
If it's a Hawks game, I'd rather watch the Hawks.
Right. Wow.
Honestly, yeah, exactly. That's where we are right now with this. And yeah, the ratings were good. I don't think they're going to maintain this. It was the first time they went out there. It was a curiosity factor. The level of play, like you said, it's not great. And I think that will catch up them. Speaking of the XFL, back in 2001, when they tried to get that thing going for the first time, the ratings were great the first couple weeks. And
he
then,
Hate Me, everybody was going nuts.
He Hate Me was fantastic. And you had Jesse the Body Ventura and the whole gang there. And the ratings slowly petered out because the football was awful. And I think the same thing's going to happen with this, whatever you want to call it, just complete disaster.
What a buzzkill.
The Chicago Wolves are battling for the top spot in the Central Division and will host five teams at Allstate Arena with winning records over the next 2 weeks. This should be fun. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for more information. I did tune in Saturday night. I was clicking around. I saw it. And what's funny is I was driving later Saturday and I heard a promo for the ABC NBA game, and I didn't realize how many games in a row Russell Westbrook had a triple-double. I was aware of what was going on with the beard and the Rockets and the 30-point games, and I thought, wow, actually, I'm not an NBA guy. I typically wouldn't watch a NBA game. I'm typically not in on a Saturday night. I was indoors this Saturday night, meaning I wasn't out of my house, and I thought, oh, I'll put that on. Well, guess what? The sport I ended up watching was the football. I was there. Once I was there, I was hooked. Now, I will say, Sunday afternoon, I was curious. Now Saturday got my interest. Now, Sunday, I'm curious. So, during the intermission of the Blackhawks game, in between the second and third period, I found it over on the CBS Sports Network, and it was Birmingham and Memphis, and it was Singletary's team, and there were about five people in the stands, and it was really, really bad football. But it was football. I mean, they had some good TV angles. I didn't know who was calling the game. I didn't know any of the players.
Did you like the audio?
Yeah, audio was great. Trent Richardson was I believe he's on the Birmingham team, the old running back. So that was a name that you knew. There's a lot of coaches' names that you know. Steve Spurrier was hilarious, right? He's 40, putting up 40. Some teams, there were a couple, and Joe had mentioned he bet the under on a bunch of games. But Spurrier, of course, is running up the score. They're running these flea flickers, and they ran it almost looked like they ran the Philly special in one of their games, like late in the game when they didn't need it. This was just to rub it in, right? Typical Steve Spurrier. So I think the timing of the league is pretty good. Will I tune in again next Saturday if I'm not out? Yeah. But if I'm out, no, I wouldn't pay attention.
Only accidentally?
It's just amazing, though, that it beat the NBA
it's
like the best.
It's the debut.
The
I mean, of course people are going to watch it the first time it airs as a curiosity factor. If the ratings are this good in 2 months...
Then you'll jump on board?
No, I still think it'll be stupid.
No, it's going to go down.
Defender.
But if it even hangs around the NBA, like, that's insane. This is minor leagues.
Yeah, take it out of your updates, too. I don't want to hear that again. It's
every lead.
I think it's hard to answer those questions.
Did anybody get snubbed by the NCAA Selection Committee's first rankings, and were there any hints dropped?
Did Villanova get snubbed? They are a team that I might be considering ranking just because they've improved a lot as the year has gone on. And they have a track record of performing well in the NCAA tournament. So I was a little surprised by that. I guess they were the first team out. The Michigan State-Purdue argument is an interesting one. That will kind of that'll all play out over the course of the rest of the season. Are they protecting what they're doing exactly? Like, are they being careful about revealing exactly what their formula is? Again, this is a new thing. Based on the fact that the football stuff is very popular, all you got to do is look at last year's Final Four to determine that at this point a year ago, nobody was anticipating what ended up happening in the Final Four. It was a bit of a mystery. So there's always teams that should get more attention that don't, and they will have to find their way to glory in the tournament. It's one of the great joys of the tournament. But I don't think they did great or they did poor. I think it was just kind of a starting point, and I think everybody. I'd be curious to see what Jerry Palm had written down and how well that matched. I doubt there was a great deal of variation, but okay. I mean, it's something to look forward to each week when they reveal this and we get a better sense of it. And I understand that from a hype perspective why they'd want to do it. It works very well in college football, but I'd like to know exactly what the formula is, and that doesn't seem to be something they're interested in telling us.
Yeah, we'll talk to Mike DeCourcy at 7 o'clock for the Sporting News. He'll have a good sense of what happened and how to interpret it. But I think that, you know, when you talk about hints that were dropped, it surprised me for all the attention paid this new way of evaluating teams and the going away from the RPI to what they're calling the NET. How clever. And you wonder, okay, what does that mean? Well, Gonzaga being fourth is, to me, a hint that, you know, if we're expecting, you know, the power conferences, the Kentuckys to be rewarded, and you know, Kentucky's fifth. And you look at the second tier, and, you know, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan State, and Michigan, Gonzaga's ahead of those teams. Now, Gonzaga's done a lot of nice things. And they do have the respect of history and tradition that they've earned because of their success in the tournament. But that was maybe a hint that was dropped that maybe things won't be as different as we're anticipating because of the way that they were rewarded early in this early glimpse of the way that the NCAA selection committee is doing business. I'm very curious about the motivation behind, you know, starting this process as early as this and maybe kind of revealing where they're leaning and what they're thinking. I'm all for transparency if that's what we're going to get out of this process. So I don't know that anyone can feel necessarily snubbed by right now. I think there's some grousing out of Lexington because there's always some grousing out of Lexington. And people complaining about maybe the Gonzaga factor, but it's way too early to get overreact to anything. But I think this is a good first step in terms of trying to understand things. So when Selection Sunday comes around, we have a better idea.
Yeah, I don't have anybody outside of the top 16 that I think definitely should have been in there. I think they did a pretty good job with that based on the information that we have at this point. But what was interesting, there are teams like Nevada that a lot of people thought at this point would be looking at a one or two. Now, they've slipped this season. They're all the way down to number four. But, you know, in that number two range, you see the usual suspects with Michigan, North Carolina, Michigan State, and Kentucky. And if any of those teams falter in the top, one of those or multiple of those teams are going to jump right up and can definitely get ones.
A long way to go here until the actual Selection Sunday, but I like that this is starting to trickle in. Want to start getting in the mood for college football here as the season starts to heat up. This is the right time for it. I'm here for it. Might just be a little recency bias, but I think Michigan State, you could argue, they've been a little bit too high here in these seedings. But for a very early projection, I don't really have any major qualms. It's your usual suspects, and hard to argue a lot of it.
Yeah, I'd say, if anything, Wisconsin, probably in Villanova, there would be your flip-flop of getting Villanova at least in. They're undefeated in the Big East, and I know the Big East isn't as great and as grand as it typically is, but I've seen Wisconsin and I've seen Villanova play, and I think Villanova beats Wisconsin head-to-head, especially on a neutral site, most days of the week. I mean, I can't believe Iowa State could do this without the great Fred Hoiberg. I mean, how is this humanly possible? How is Iowa State a four seed without Fred Hoiberg?
He set the foundation, huh? You know, huh? And then it's kind of a turnkey operation now after Fred set it up.
All right. And Duke, it's just, I'd pay money. I'd need to see Duke in person. I think that's awesome. And how cool was it that LeBron was sitting? I mean, did you see like the who's who at that Duke Virginia game at Virginia
recruiting
the
trip
other night? I mean,
for LeBron.
Unbelievable! LeBron sitting there recruiting that kid for his agency later.
Whoever signs,
I think
will,
it's fun. I love
later
the early
demand
talk.
A trade to LeBron.
I love the early talk. The timing couldn't be better. Right, the first Saturday after football ends. So I think it's great. It's great for the sport and to you know get the pencil and paper out and get the bracket started.
It wasn't too distracting from the AAF action.
No, I can do two things at once, believe it or not.
312-644-6767, that's the telephone number. What did you think of Otto Porter's first couple games as a Bull? And will it matter if he's not as good as Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis moving forward here? What do you think of, are they going to get too good? Is that a problem for you? Can their season be successful even if they don't wind up in the playoffs? What's more likely, the Yankees stepping in and reportedly offering Manny Machado $220 million or getting ready to give him up to $220 million, or the White Sox having already offered $250 million, as one report said. What does it mean when the Alliance of American Football has higher TV ratings than an NBA game involving Harden against Westbrook? And also, what did you think of the NCAA selection committee, their first rankings for the college basketball tournament? Are you going to follow that and let it guide you when it comes to picking your bracket? Any hints that were dropped in that thing about different teams? 312-644-6767, Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.